Motherhood's not meant to be done alone. The world's biggest small group Mom to Mom study series delves into the profound journey of motherhood through the lens of Jochebed, the remarkable mother of Moses. In today's episode, our study creator, Kim Weir, engages in an insightful conversation with four women, each navigating distinct phases of motherhood. Tune in now to part one of this enriching discussion.
Welcome, moms. We're so glad that you're here. Take a deep breath. This is a safe space. This is all about you. I'm Kim Weir, and I'm an author and a Bible teacher and the author of this Mom to Mom study. And I have to tell you that I put this study together thinking about you and thinking about me, really, because as moms, it's just valuable to have voices in your life. So I'll start with this first. Recently, I took up a new hobby. I've never had a hobby before, and I've taken up pottery. Now, I just got a whim that I decided I wanted to be a potter. So I went all in and I bought myself a wheel and I bought myself a little baby kiln and a few things that I needed, and I just started. I just jumped in. You could call me a self-taught potter. Okay, you already know the problems with this, don't you? Well, so let me just say that there have been some successes, and I wish I had my phone, I'd show you all of them. But for every success, meaning a pot that actually didn't blow up in the kiln and came out looking like what I intended, a mug or a cup, for every one of those that came out, there were probably 10 that collapsed on the wheel before I ever got there. Mm. So I'm having some success, but I know that I need help. And so I have booked for myself a one-on-one training session with a potter that I'm going to get some mentoring with. And I have full expectation I'm going to do better. Okay, now think about this, Mom. They give you a baby and they let you go home from the hospital with it. Or you have adopted this child. You have somehow come into the care and feeding of this one. And yet, it's your first. You've never had experience. And you are a self-taught mom. And hopefully you've kept your kid alive, and congratulations with that. But how much better to have voices come alongside of you, those who have experience, those who have maybe been places you haven't been, to share with you, hey, don't do that, don't do that, don't squeeze there, look out for that. Oh, you're doing awesome. That's what we want to be for you at World's Biggest Small Group and the Mom to Mom Bible study. And really, for this roundtable, we just want to be some voices in your life that say, you can do this. Here's some of our experience. Here's what we've learned. Here's where we failed. Mm-hmm. And I hope that that's an encouragement for you, because you don't have to just be self-taught. God has given us this great community of other believers who can come alongside of us. And that's what we're doing today. So let me introduce you to the roundtable. All of the ladies at the table today, and thank you guys for joining. I appreciate you so much, are part of our Greater World's Biggest Small Group family. Yeah. And so there are voices that you want to hear from. Their voices I want to hear from. I'm really excited to hear what you guys have experienced in your mom journey, where you're just rejoicing, and maybe even where you're struggling because misery loves company. Yeah. You know, if there's someplace that we need encouragement, sometimes it's good just to hear that everybody else isn't knocking it out of the park. Yeah. So thanks for that. So we've got Taylor, and we have Rochelle, and we have Raina, and we have Morgan. And here's what's interesting is that all of you guys work in public-facing roles. So good news, if you fail at mothering, everybody's going to know about it.
Yeah, we talk about it. It makes for great stories.
It does make for great. And that is the beauty, I think, of Christian radio. You should be doing that because it helps people heal. It certainly is like a big therapy session for yourself too, when you just share it and then other people can go, oh, I do that too. Yeah. You're not alone.
But I think almost every mom can relate to the whole public pressure thing, because if there's anything that reflects on us strongly, it's our kids, right? I mean, if they do something stupid out there, we're thinking, they're thinking, oh, what's wrong with their mom? You know, if they do something well, we're like, look at me, that's my kid, you know? And so I think all moms can relate. Let's talk about that for a minute. Can relate to just feeling the pressure that your kids just get it all right, and that, you know, you are a great mom, maybe even more so in a Christian community where we feel like there's a double expectation. Some thoughts on that, Taylor?
I think for me, I was on a morning show, kind of like Rochelle, in a different city, a small town. And I went through a divorce and a child custody battle that was super public.
Yeah.
And I experienced so much judgment because I left the town and moved away. And so for me now, I think I'm just used to it. I'm used to people judging me or saying, I would never do it that way. And I've just learned that as long as I have the relationship that I have with Jesus and I'm praying and I'm asking him, help me raise these children, and I'm really in that relationship with him, I know at the end of the day, I'm doing the best I can do. And he's kind of become my spouse in raising my children. Then I can take a deep breath and say, okay, God, we did pretty good today.
You know? I love that. And when it doesn't go well, you can say, God, what were you thinking today?
Blame it on him.
Yeah, yeah. Other thoughts on just that idea of feeling the pressure of mom expectations?
I think it's something everybody deals with because of social media. You know, you see what everybody else, you see the highlight reel of what everybody else's kids are doing. And it's not the nitty gritty day-to-day stuff. It's the, they won the spelling bee or they got into their favorite college. You don't see all of the sort of like heartbreak and difficult moments where mom snapped or dad yelled. And I think we often compare ourselves to that, you know, because the world is more public than it's ever been. A lot of people have more public roles than they used to. And it's challenging to see those people and not know what their private moments are like, because you know what yours are like.
Yeah.
And I think that we put a lot of undue pressure on ourselves for that reason.
Yeah.
And I think about my childhood and I know my parents lost it with me once in a while, you know, but it's not like I hold that against them forever, because we're all human and everybody, you know, loses their cool sometimes.
More public than we've ever been. Thanks for bringing that up, because I do think that adds an element to parenting. And I don't know why dads don't feel, I don't know what dads are doing that they don't feel this like we do, but we do feel it. And Raina, what has that been like to you to try to balance the expectations you feel from other people versus how you're just trying to be a good mom?
I've actually had to learn to drop them. The expectations that people have for my children, because they are my children, and because I'm on a platform, I am going to do my best to raise my kids, you know, in a Christ-centered home, get them to church, but I never want to force them to pretend to be something in public because we're trying to keep a vision for everybody else. So it's like, I had to just drop it and say, be you. And yeah, that's what we're doing.
Yeah. It's really hard not to project the expectation that you think other people have on your children from you. I remember when my kids were little, and it was a small thing, but oh my gosh, it was so eye-opening. I was at a, shockingly enough, I used to play basketball Tuesdays and Thursdays with a group of women. I mean, I ran around the court following them. I didn't really play, but they were great. They were gracious to let me in. And the kids were all kind of running around. And I remember one little boy, my daughter was three, and a little boy who was also three stuck something in a plug socket. And I remember having this thought, my child would never do that. I can't believe that he didn't know better already. The next day at home, my daughter sticks a penny in a light socket. Yeah. And God was just saying, really, Kim? But it was very eye-opening to remember that the expectations that I have can be just as toxic as other people, but they seem to be shaped by the culture around us. Mm-hmm. And so when you think about, Rochelle, just the idea of how you see your own children in relationship to your family sees them or your community sees them. Yeah. How do you balance that?
Well, everything got destroyed, I think, with expectations at the very beginning, because my first child, which is your first example.
Mm-hmm. Your guinea pig.
The guinea pig.
Always the guinea pig.
You know, everything just went by the wayside. I had the child that you looked at and thought, that child who's screaming in the store. And I'm like, okay, well, that child needs to be taken outside. And it's not that I didn't take the child outside. My child had special needs. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't aware of him until later. Mm-hmm. And he was diagnosed with autism. And I just, like, every preconceived notion of what parenting looks like. My dad was a children's pastor. I worked in the children's nursery there at church for years. I knew how to get the kids in line. Do not talk back to me, you know. and all of that. No. You don't have any of that now. It's gone because you're like, I have to start all over again, mm-hmm. which was probably really good thinking back because I don't want to treat my child like anybody else's child. And I had to, as Raina was just talking about, you just have to drop the expectation for yourself and others. Otherwise, you are carrying around this weight, mm-hmm. this burden. Mm. What are people thinking, feeling? And what's most important, I found at the end of the day, what I was actually thinking and feeling. Mm. Because it got to the point where I was so devastated by the things happening in my home that he wasn't able to communicate with me. I didn't even really care at that point what other people were thinking. I'm thinking all the worst things possible, mm. right? Wow. That's so mm-hmm. really good support system. It's so good. Like us just talking, like here, we look like the Christian version of The View and we're not talking over each other. So that's good.
Do you want me to yell at you?
I was going
to
say, everybody jump in, please.
But I think those programs, those Mommy's Day Out programs, what is it called? The preschoolers?
MOPS.
MOPS, mm-hmm. which I never found one for me. I found a similar version of that for myself with a group of friends, but it's life-giving and it's so important.
I think one of the reasons that's so powerful is because you're automatically walking in going, oh, they all know they need something too. Yeah. You know, they all know they need, they're not just an island unto themselves or, and your story, I think really highlights that it's not that there is a list of things and if you can just master it, you're going to be the world's best right. mom and your kids are going to turn out okay because you get what you get mm-hmm. as far as, and think of all of the different factors that are involved. Your marriage is part of it mm-hmm. or your personal relationships are part of it. The different kids you have are part of it. Mm-hmm. The dynamic that you brought into your family or your spouse or your partner brought into the family. Yeah. You have all of those, where you live, the culture, the society, the community, all of those things. And if that wasn't enough, even if you could master it, if you have more than one child, that blows it out of the water because right. they're never going to be the same. Right. If you get one child yeah. and you think yeah. all this works with that child, yes. the other child, complete fail because they're never the same. And so it does require this. And I think that's why so many people say being a mom is exhausting mm. because it does require this nonstop vigilance yeah. of involvement and engagement. Raina, you're shaking your head in order to really shape and mold and cause this relationship with your children to be as meaningful and as beneficial as it possibly can.
I'm shaking my head because my daughter is 18 now. And she looked at me the other day and she's like, I don't know how you do the whole mom thing. It's a lot. I'm like, thank you. It is. Yeah. Finally now she sees it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Kim, I would like to know when we stopped saying commonly, it takes a village. We've become like an island to ourselves, right?
Yes.
We take our own problems. We take them inside.
Absolutely.
If we're not being a part of one of those groups and maybe we don't feel like we can because what will people think? Mm. But yeah, I wonder
to Morgan's point, you know, the whole social media thing that gives a snapshot of perfection.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't, if your life is perfect from my right. limited viewpoint, I'm not comfortable coming to you and saying, I don't like my kid today.
Right.
Or I don't like my spouse today. Mm-hmm. Or my spouse and I can't agree on my kid's struggle in this area, whatever it is.
Right.
Who am I going to go to if it looks like everybody else has got their stuff together?
Sure.
So, I mean, I don't know, but I'm wondering if maybe it's related to mm-hmm. that.
I mean, it could be. It's one of those things that would be hard to ever pinpoint. But I do think that having a community of people is important. And we can find those in different ways. Sometimes it's your biological family. Sometimes you don't live anywhere near biological family and you need to have other people that can step in and just be a part of your children's lives. I had a friend when I lived in another city they didn't have any siblings on either the parent's side. And so they were like, could you just be like an honorary aunt? You know, sometimes you have to be maybe awkwardly intentional about
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to like say out loud, hey, we don't have a lot of support, could you do it? But of course I was willing to, you know?
But I also think in today's world, like when I look at how my grandmothers raised their children, mm-hmm. they didn't work, okay? So their job was raising children, and they were able to spend the days with friends or mm-hmm. family members, like aunts and uncles were mm-hmm. such a big part of that. And now most of the moms, not all of them, but a lot of moms have their full-time job, mm-hmm. plus their marriage to take care of, plus, you know, whatever. And I think we don't have the village per se because everyone's busy.
Yeah. You know? They all moved to the city. There's no village left.
Right, exactly. So,
yeah, that's a great point. And even those moms who are at home mm-hmm. to make a more prioritized focus that's the choice they made. Yeah. There's so many ways for them to be involved in other things. It's like it's just home anymore. It's home plus how many other things. So I think we all have to struggle too with the fact that I don't want to call them distractions because there are other valuable parts of life that just require our attention, but they do in many ways distract from maybe a more intentional focus that was just on kids.
If I could also just share, I had horrible postpartum issues. Because I have an anxiety disorder, I have OSD. I just made it up.
It's OCD.
But I have OCD and I have to take medicine on a regular basis. And I had to get off that medicine when you get pregnant and then you're breastfeeding. And now I have no, like the chemicals that were already kind of not great. Well, your chemicals are really not great now because of all of the things you're going through as a mom. It was so bad, y'all.
With both kids?
It was so bad. It was not as bad with Caleb. Okay. And I think I had people specifically praying for that. But I also know that God allows those things to touch your life for a greater purpose. And maybe even for this moment right now to give somebody permission to go, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
And because it was...
What did you do?
What did you do?
When you realize I'm not okay, what did you do?
I told my husband. With OCD, mine is a faith-based problem. So when I was a child, I had trouble with checking things. I don't know if you're familiar with that OCD. If you see all the like shows like Monk, you know, I have to check so many times and stuff like that. That kind of, I got weaned off of, if you will, but it was always like my faith wasn't good enough, strong enough. I don't, I sin. I have to go and ask for forgiveness. If I don't, then I'm not okay with my brother. And the Bible tells me I have to do this. So I have to do all hours of the night. I was apologizing to people. It was crazy. And then I found out what was going on. Mm-hmm. And then I could compartmentalize. But I've noticed with every single big major life event that it gets triggered again. Mm-hmm. So when I got married, that's when I needed to get more help. And when I got off the medicine for my first baby, I think for a while you feel pretty good. And then it came in like a flood. Mm-hmm. And it was scary what I was thinking. Scary. Like, I'm not going to repeat this because people will lock me up. Scary.
Mm. Wow.
And I didn't enjoy motherhood.
That, okay.
It was
so
hard.
Let me just say that may be one of the greatest taboos that will break today. Mm-hmm. And that is, it's almost like, so I think I'm the only grandmother at the table.
Getting close to that. We're getting close.
So, you know, people all the time's like, oh, grandparenting, it's so great. You're going to love it. It's better than being a parent. And I'm like, am I the only person who says, no, it's not. I liked being a parent. But here's what we don't say. Sometimes I don't like being a parent. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't like motherhood. This is hard. It's not okay to say that in most places and feel like you're not being judged. But have you ever felt that sense of this is too hard? This is just, I'm not loving this.
For me, it's especially difficult when I'm around people that just are so delighted to be a mother, you know, and I love my kids. I do. But there are other days where I'm like, if I could just be by myself in this house for 24 hours, I would be a better person, you know? And then, you know, there are some people that you try and talk to about it and they're like, oh, but I love my kids. And you're like, okay, well, I love mine too, you know? Yeah. But it's good. I have some people that I'm close with who I am able to say those kinds of things to. And I can say, hey, today's been a hard day and I am not having a good time. And some of them are parents and some of them are not. And they've all been very, very supportive of that.
Yeah. Wow.
I went through kind of similar with what Rochelle went through. I had premature babies. They both had birth defects. Mm-hmm. They were in the NICU. One was like 27 days. One was 34 wow. days. And I only was off from work for 4 weeks after a C-section with both kids. And then we had surgeries. And then they both had colic. And I was trying to manage getting up at 3:45 in the morning for a morning show. And it was a lot.
You were doing the morning show from wow. the hospital, right?
No, no. It was 4 weeks. After 4 weeks, I was home.
But great idea there, Rochelle.
Oh my. Yeah. Okay. And I had children in the NICU.
Yeah.
And wow. then we had surgeries. And so I just remember thinking when I was pregnant, why do women like to be pregnant? This is horrible. Like, I don't enjoy
not this. Glowing. I am not glowing. Do.
Right. Yeah. And so, but it was hard for me. Pregnancy yeah. was hard for me. The birth, I gave birth alone at the hospital yeah. with my first son. It was an emergency. I was put to sleep. Like, so I look at motherhood. Mm. I always tell my kids today, you know, I had such a traumatic like birth experience and then their first couple of years of their lives. And I'm like, I'm so glad that you guys are okay now because it was tough.
Yeah. I'm gonna say it. I don't really like babies. So everybody's like, oh, baby, baby. I'm like, please get out of the baby stage. I love my daughter-in-law. She loves babies and she just was such a great baby nurturer. And it feels like I should say that as a mom and I don't like babies, you know? Yeah. I like them when I can talk to them yes. and they
reason
can-
reason with them.
Yes.
Stop crying.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. So sometimes maybe we just need to find somebody to say, I'm just not loving being a mom today.
Yeah.
I love my kids and I'm gonna get there, but I'm not loving it today.
Well, I was a teen mom. It's part of my testimony. Oh, wow. I was a teen mom and it wasn't easy mm-hmm. at all. It was so hard.
I can't imagine.
It was very difficult. And the older they get, you know, we've grown together, mm-hmm. but no one has hurt my feelings the way my kids have hurt my feelings. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm learning. But thank you, Lord, that we have Jesus to go to in those moments.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It is funny, right? I mean, we birth them and we love them and they look to us, but then so much of who we are is shaped by mm-hmm. what we see coming back in their eyes.
Yes.
You know, same with all the people that were closest to us, right? I mean, what we see reflected in them becomes who we are. And it can be so, thank you for sharing that painful mm-hmm. When that comes back at us in an unflattering way. And the funny thing about kids is, you know, they'll just say stuff off the fly and yet it becomes ingrained in us, you know. Like they didn't mean it, they won't even remember they said it. So yeah. My mom and I have had this conversation. Well, let's talk about this. I mean, there are so many different phases of momming. And so, you know, we're talking to you guys that are in all different phases. Maybe you're in that baby phase and you're like, what is wrong with her that she doesn't like babies? I will hold your baby. I just don't want your baby.
Not taking it home.
Not taking it home. You might be in the toddler stage. You might be in the middle school which is like for most mm-hmm. people. I love the teen years. Like that was one of my favorite years. Maybe like me, you're now parenting adult children and you're still a mom in that phase. And all of those require different things from us.
Oh, yeah.
From having full control to having where I'm at right now and not loving it, no control. Yeah. And so let's talk a little bit about that idea of control when it comes to your kids, where you're at, where you have struggled, what you love, maybe you're learning to let go because that has to be part of the mom journey for a healthy relationship.
So. I think I have the youngest kids.
All right, let's
so
go with you.
I have a kindergartner and an almost middle schooler. And this, you know, my son is going to be in middle school next year. And I think, you know, we're in that phase where I have to learn to sort of loosen up a little bit and let go and, you know, not just be up in his business all the time. Like, you know, I don't get any say anymore in how he wears his hair or what his style is. Mm. To be fair, with my six-year-old daughter, I have no say in she's her own person. But and I think it's just hard because I'm used to him being my baby. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to let go of that. And he still he would be so mad if he knew I was telling you this, but he still wants me to tell him a story when I tuck him into bed at night. Aww. And some people have said to me, like, you know, he's like in almost middle school. And I said, I will tell him a story every day for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
Because I think that's one of the ways that we can still connect, even though he's in this awkward, like preteen phase.
Yeah. Oh, I love that because that's really what I'm doing with adult kids. You look to see where they're at and then figure out how to connect in their new phase of life. Yeah. So wise.
So my daughter and I are going to see a counselor together. And last week, I have never realized how my kids really feel about how the word "you're obsessed with us." I've never realized that my kid felt that way. And to hear them say, "You've got to get a life."
Who's the kid said that or the counselor?
Waverly, my daughter, said, "You've got to get a life." And she had tears in her eyes. And I thought, wow, I can't believe you're saying that. But when we dug into that topic, we realized as a teenager, my parents both got married to somebody else. They remarried and they left me. And so you parent a lot of the wounds from your childhood. Yeah. And the counselor, her name's Allison Steffen, she said, "Do you see that you are basically healing the teenager that felt left, which is me, within your own children? You've become the obsessed parent that you wanted as a child."
Right.
And so my daughter said, "Mom, please date someone. Like, date.
Turn your eyes off me for a minute."
I do think it's a beautiful thing, though, when we see what our parents did that hurt us and that we can say, we're going to do it better for our children.
And not repeat it.
And not repeat it. But I guess there is that balance where we need to take it to the Lord and not go too far.
So, Raina, I will not leave my daughter ever. Unless I'm at work, I am with her 7 days a week, 24/7, unless I'm at work. And she said, like, sometimes on a Saturday night, I don't want to be with you. And I'm like, what? She's just turned 16.
And that's, surprise.
And that's a hard thing to accept. But also, it's like the counselor said, she's growing up. Like, you have permission. Go out with friends. Go find a boyfriend. Go date, you know?
She's not going to look at you badly.
Right.
For going and doing the thing.
But Rochelle, I think I have my whole life judged my parents for getting a divorce when I was a freshman. And then they both got remarried when I was in 10th grade. And then they just kind of left. And I actually lived in an apartment by myself in Clear Lake and finished high school. And so I don't ever want to leave my children, right? I'm like, no, I'm here. I'm here. Hey, look at me. So that letting go is happening in my life right now.
Yeah.
Sure.
And it happens at all different phases a little bit. I will say this, though, working in women's ministry for a couple of decades now, so really getting to come alongside a lot of moms and my own mom experience. So we don't even have to have garbage in our background to be obsessed with our kids.
That's right.
They become our little mini-me projects, you know? And if that is all we have in our lives, and I'm just going to say it because sometimes you got to hear the hard things. If your kids and your family are all you have in your life, letting go is going to destroy you.
Yeah, it'll be a lot harder.
God does not call us to that kind of exclusivity. Mm-hmm. He calls us to making our families a priority. Of course, he gave us these. We committed to that family. But at the same time, there are a lot of other callings he has in God's word for us individually. And if to the exclusion of all else, we do this, everything about us is tied with them. Our identity, our purpose, our value. And if you do a good job, you're not raising children, you're raising adults. Our goal is not to raise children. Our goal is to raise adults. Yes. And if you raise an adult and they're still with you as an adult, something didn't happen correctly. Yeah. And that just requires letting go. So the best advice somebody gave me once as I was, I think mine were in like middle school, early high school, probably middle school, but I was already starting to feel, because I love my kids so much. I'm like, I love you so much. Yes. What was that cartoon? The little dog, I love you and squeeze you and hug you. And,
like, that's
Elmira. That's the way I feel about my kids. And so I already was feeling like, how is this going to go? They're going to go to college or they're going to move out or, you know. And somebody said to me, what you need to do right now is don't wait until they're gone to plan your life. Get involved in your life now. do things now. Start, even if you can't commit as much time to it as you will later, start. And it was so wise for my heart, because by the time they left, I was like, okay, I love you. I'm going to get to have a little more time for this. I'm going to be a potter. That's
what you're, and you know, the counselor said something so great. She said, Taylor, the best thing that you can do for Waverly right now is be an example of living. Yes. Be an example of, hey, you know, my mom had hobbies. Like, I loved a horseback ride. My mom every Saturday morning would go horseback riding, or my mom did this, or my mom did that. And I really honestly have not done that with my children, because I became
all right, we need a play date with you.
Does anybody else feel guilty when you leave like your husband or your children and you go do stuff? Do you feel that?
Yes. And then I realize they're like, no, mom, go.
Right.
Yeah, they're 16 and 18 and it's that season that you're having. It's time to start.
They want you, they're ready to send you out of the nest.
Yes.
Is what it amounts
and
to.
And I'm also though, but you're a single parent.
Yeah.
So all that responsibility you feel on yourself.
Absolutely.
Nobody to fall back on.
And I can shoulder it with my husband.
Yes.
And I feel that it has been a more balanced. My son is going to graduate. He's going to go probably to college.
Yeah.
Still on the fence about it, Raina. That's been a whole thing with our morning show talking about it. But it's really difficult, I think, from the perspective of a special needs point of view, too.
Sure.
It's like, all right, am I now thinking about things that he's fine with, but he needs me here. Or, you know, we never filed for the 504. Should I have done that? Maybe I should have been here, or that. All these things that you question. I think the biggest thing that I tackled, and I brought this up with my friends Carter and Raina, is the releasing of our children to the Lord. Because I can release the outcome of my own bad planning. Mm-hmm. But now I'm going to have to, the same Jesus that is in me is in my child.
Yeah.
And if I have hopefully entrusted him to the Lord and he has given his life to Christ, mm-hmm. I mean, he has, I have to allow him to fail.
Mm-hmm.
But also the freedom to fail, but also, okay, but God, there's no but God. But God, what about the, you know, the autism? But you know, you've...
And Rochelle, you know what I say to myself now? I've started saying this to myself. God loves my children more than I love my children.
Right.
Yeah.
And if I can just release that and say, okay, God, I know that you love them and you see things I don't, it's sort of helped me to let go a little more.
Yeah.
Well, that is part one of our roundtable discussion. I hope you'll catch the next episode where we talk about other things like how to pass on your faith and how to help your kids catch things that are really important as they move into adulthood. And of course, we'll also explore what it means to lean into Jesus as your partner as you go through the mom journey. So all that is in the next episode as we wrap our roundtable discussion. I also hope that you will check out another resource that we have available for you, and that is my book, Everyday God. You know, leaning into Jesus means spending time with him every day, and it doesn't have to take an hour. Sometimes just having 5 or 10 minutes to lean in and hear something that God has that's relevant to your everyday life. And that's what the Everyday God devotional book is, 365-day journey where you find the hope and the help that you need in the daily presence of God. You can get that at Amazon.com. Again, it's called Everyday God, and the author is me, Kim Weir. So check that out. And of course, we'll have a link to that in our show notes below.
Don't miss out on more opportunities like this to rekindle your faith and find inspiration in the world's biggest small group's latest study. Text the word GROW, G-R-O-W, to 67101 to find out more.